welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. Brazil's new president, Jair Bolsonaro, is often called the Trump of the tropics. A populist right-wing leader, he took charge of South America's largest country in January after a bitter campaign in which he was stabbed during a campaign rally. After recovering, Bolsonaro was sworn in promising to free Brazil from socialism and political correctness following 12 years of rule by the left-wing Workers' Party. Bolsonaro's winning message was to deliver economic growth in a country still recovering from an economic crisis between 2014 and 2016. He's also vowed to clean up government, which is a big issue given that Brazil's previous three presidents have either been impeached, charged, or jailed on corruption charges. Meanwhile, Bolsonaro has also promised to get tough on crime in a country where there are more than 60,000 homicides annually. A former congressman and army captain, he's also inflamed the country's divisions by making a number of racist, homophobic, and misogynistic statements over the years. He's called black activists, quote, animals who should go back to the zoo. He's told one female political opponent that he wouldn't rape her because she was, quote, too ugly. He's also said that he would prefer that his own son die in an accident than that he come home with a boyfriend. Brazil's environmentalist and indigenous rights activists also see him as a threat. So on today's Global Journalist, a look at Brazil's new president and how he may change the world's fifth most populous country. In a few minutes, we'll hear from a great panel of experts tracking Bolsonaro's presidency. First, we're going to bring in Patricia Campos Melo. She's a journalist and columnist for Folha de São Paulo, Brazil's largest newspaper. Patricia, welcome.
Thank you, Jason.
Well, similar to President Trump, Jair Bolsonaro is a very polarizing figure. You hear reports that some Brazilians won't use his name, will turn the TV off when his face appears. Other people are very devoted and view him as sort of a savior. Why does he inspire such intense feelings?
I think he embodies something that was lacked for the last 12 years, and actually before, because not only PT administrations were center-left, the previous administration with Fernando Henrique was also center-left. So he touched something that had not had any answer so far, which is conservative people, law and order candidates. A big part of the population was expecting, was hoping to have such a candidate that would embody the strong man that would finish with corruption and crime. So this part of the population voted for him as the anti-PT candidate.
Well, in the U.S., you hear about how people's views on President Trump actually affect their family life because they can't sit together for a meal at a holiday without arguing about the president. I mean, is it the same way in Brazil with Bolsonaro?
Totally, yes. You had these historic fights between among family members on WhatsApp groups. This become very, very common, and people who stop talking to each other because of politics, because, just as you said, the people who like Bolsonaro, they're really, really very strongly attracted to him, and the people who oppose him really have this sort of repulsion.
Well, in the U.S., you hear about how people's I'm sorry, I wanted to ask you about just some news, and that was related to the stabbing of Bolsonaro in September. I understand that he's been back in the hospital this week. Can you update us on his condition?
His current condition is he's stable. He underwent surgery because he had to remove the colostomy bag that he was using since his operation in September. So he's stable, but there's no estimate of when he would leave hospital. I mean, there's a little bit of uncertainty there.
Well, I want to ask you as well about another parallel between Bolsonaro and the 2016 U.S. presidential election, and that was the deceptive use of social media to influence voters. You reported on how WhatsApp was used to influence people during the campaign in a way that didn't sound like it was above board. Talk to us about that.
Yes, he's very, very good with social media. His campaign had been sort of investing in the whole social media mobilization for years. This was not that they started during the campaign. They had one of his sons, Carlos. He's very He does even like research on that. So they had been gathering a huge group of followers on WhatsApp groups, and they did use those groups to amplify the anti-PT, anti-Lula message in a very efficient manner. They also used, as we reported, contributions, non-declared contributions from businessmen to finance this, because they used it in a professional manner with marketing agencies doing massive WhatsApp messaging.
And I understand that there was also like a scraping of people's phone numbers and personal information from their Facebook accounts as part of that.
Yes, this was part of the campaign. They have the whole variety of weapons, social media weapons for political campaigns. They use bots on Twitter. They have they obtain illegally the IDs of several people so that they can register cell phones and use these cell phones to do the massive messaging. So it's become very sophisticated how they use this social media to for the campaign.
And similar to the U.S. campaign, I understand that there were also a number of threats against members of the media for their reporting, including against you. Talk to us about that.
Yes, it's very, it's so similar to Trump that it's even ridiculous. He also calls the mainstream media fake news, Bolsonaro and his sons, and they have been targeting members of the media, including myself. It's very difficult because they sort of, journalists have become targets. So whenever you write a critical story or you run a critical show, you're gonna become a target, and your personal life.
How is it exactly that you're targeted?
Well, I received thousands of messages, email, phone calls with actual threats, like I'm gonna hit you, I'm gonna beat you up, you are a communist. This was not only me, like several other people received. My son, who's six, received threats. So it's very difficult. It's better now.
Well, I wanted to ask you as well, since Bolsonaro has taken office, similar with Donald Trump's inauguration, I think there were a lot of questions about whether or not he would actually try to carry out some of the more extreme or controversial proposals that he made during the campaign. What do we know so far about what Bolsonaro is actually going to do versus what he said during the campaign?
One of his proposals, which was gun ownership, he's already done it. So this was one, and he is...
So this is a proposal to loosen restrictions on gun ownership in Brazil.
Exactly, yes, loosen restriction. And that might become even... he's also working on some more measures to not only ownership, but how and when you can carry your gun. This is also on the works. And the whole ideological part of his campaign, he's trying to implement that, including, for instance, extracting ideology, communist or Marxist ideology, from schools and universities. This is also a proposal he wants to get passed. Other things, he walked back a little. For instance, he wanted to emulate Trump and transfer the embassy, Brazilian embassy, to Jerusalem in Israel.
Oh, to move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem in Israel.
Exactly, yes. So now they're still saying, oh, okay, we're going to do this, but there's no time frame. So some of the things, he's getting this reality shock, but the other more controversial things, he's insisting that he's going to implement them, and he's already implemented the gun ownership one.
Well, Patricia Campos Melo, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
A reminder that this is Global Journalist. On today's program, we're talking about Brazil's new populist president, Jair Bolsonaro, a man often compared to President Trump. Bolsonaro took office last month after an incredibly bitter campaign, and as with Trump, many people are watching to see if he tries to carry out some of his most divisive promises. Now, to expand our discussion, we're going to bring in three other guests. Joining us is Wira Davies. He's a Brazil correspondent for BBC News. He's with us today from Cardiff in the United Kingdom. Wira, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Also with us in the city of Salvador de Bahia in northeastern Brazil is Richard Lapper. He was the Latin American editor at the Financial Times and is now an associate fellow at the think tank Chatham House. Richard, welcome.
Hi there.
And on the line from Providence, Rhode Island is James Green. He's a professor of Latin American history and director of the Brazil Initiative at Brown University. James, welcome to you.
Glad to be here.
Well, Weir, let me start with you. I want to pick up on some of the things that Patricia Campos Melo was talking about, but first let's talk about crime in Brazil for a moment, because I understand that this was on the minds of a lot of Brazilians during the campaign. I mentioned in the introduction there were something like 60,000 homicides in Brazil just in 2017. The murder rate is something like six times that of even in the U.S. So why is it so high? How is Bolsonaro tackling this?
Well, this was one of his biggest campaign messages that went down really well with the Brazilian electorate. As you say, the murder rate in Brazil is 60,000 and rising. And most of those murders are carried out with firearms, with guns. Many of them, of course, in Bolsonaro's home city of Rio de Janeiro, but not exclusively Rio. It's a big problem in the northeast, in São Paulo, indeed across Brazil. And tackling crime and corruption was probably his biggest ticket, I think, because ideologically, he doesn't really stand for much in a similar way to Trump. We know Brazil has been governed by left-wing and centre-left parties for the last few years, but Bolsonaro didn't really have much of a political ideology. We don't even know too much more about that. He failed to impress people recently at the Davos summit. He didn't really shed much light on what he was going to do in Brazil, certainly economically. But on that big issue of crime and corruption, he's really hit home. He made a pretty smart move in appointing Sergio Moro, who's a famous judge and prosecutor in Brazil, as a justice minister. That gave strength to his anti-corruption credentials, although, of course, we've now seen that some of Bolsonaro's own family members have been embroiled pretty swiftly in an alleged corruption scandal of their own. But it was this cleanliness that he brought to the presidency. He wasn't, he said in his campaign, corrupt, unlike some of his predecessors. And he did stand as a former army captain. He was very, very big on law and order. And he has always defended the rights of military police, especially in cities like Rio, to use violence and force in the persecution of their duty.
Right, and he has spoken about how he was okay with the police sort of shooting criminals first and asking questions later, it sounds like. But I want to turn this to Richard Lapper, if I might, because you live in the country's northeast, where Davies mentioned that this is an area that has been particularly affected by violent crime here. One of Bolsonaro's ways of addressing this, as Patricia Campos Melo was mentioning, is to loosen restrictions on gun ownership. Talk to us about that. Do people there, do they welcome easier access to guns?
So, I mean, I think, you know, most people would argue that easing restrictions on gun ownership is not a very good way to reduce crime. To reduce crime, you need to improve policing of Brazilian cities. I don't think, that is very much on the justice minister's agenda. He wants to improve the coordination of policing, which is still in Brazil a responsibility of individual Brazilian states, okay? So, you know, many of the organized crime gangs whose activities are leading to rising homicide rates are organized on a national basis, essentially, a cross-border basis. So one of the big challenges that Moro wants to address is to improve coordination. The whole question about gun ownership is a sop to many of his supporters in more rural areas of Brazil, particularly in the center-west, you know, the big agribusiness zones of Brazil. It's actually less radical than it might have been, that gun ownership change. But I think, you know, we're waiting to see what Moro's going to do in terms of his proposals on tackling organized crime.
Well, James Green, if I could bring you into this discussion as well, because as Weir Davies was mentioning, one of the issues that was very real for Brazilians during the campaign was sort of fears that Brazil was drifting towards sort of a dysfunctional, corrupt socialist government like in Venezuela. How well-founded were those fears? How big of an influence was that in Bolsonaro's election?
I think they're as ridiculous as when Donald Trump yesterday in the State of Union, the 2 days ago, stated that the United States was verging on a Venezuelan socialist regime because of social democrats in the Congress. No, actually, Bolsonaro is using these fears of radicalization to his advantage in order to be able to eliminate or to quell or to deter the social movements in Brazil who have been fighting before democratization, but certainly since the new constitution of 1988 for expanded social justice and rights. And he is very interested in deterring their activities. The gun ownership in the cities will also affect the feeling that people in the countryside have a right to use the force of violence to deter poor peasants who are trying to have land ownership rights, indigenous people whose lands are being encroached upon by settlers going to their demarcated territories, and basically widespread violence against poor people in the rural areas who have been fighting for their rights for many, many decades.
Okay, so it sounds like, from your perspective, then this looks like pure demagoguery then.
Well, it's demagoguery based on actual policy practices it's implementing. The expansion of gun ownership will put into the hands of millions of people guns. I think it will increase domestic violence against women. And I think everyday kind of violence will erupt, people being angry with each other over a traffic accident might pull out their guns to solve the justice issues. You know, when I talk to people in the United States about Bolsonaro, I try to explain he is the Trump of the tropics, but he's 10 times worse.
Well, Weira Davies, if I could bring this back to you then, let's talk a little bit about Brazil's economy, since that's often a very important issue for many voters. Unemployment in Brazil, I understand it jumped from something like 6 million people to 12 million people during its economic crisis a couple of years ago. How is Bolsonaro going to go about sort of addressing those economic issues?
I think one of the biggest fears, certainly amongst us on the left who supported the previous government of Lula and, of course, of Dilma Rousseff, was the program they had, Bolsa Família, which was a family allowance program, which was a structured program based around education and nutrition and some state handouts, which brought as many as 30 or 40 million Brazilians out of poverty. Now, that also helped fuel an economic boom, a consumer boom in the country in the first first few years of this century. And I think one of the fears amongst many is if that those kind of schemes are weakened under Bolsonaro, the more Brazilians will fall back into poverty, this internal sort of market, internal consumerism will diminish. And Brazil economically, certainly in terms of poverty and economics, could find itself going backwards. That said, Bolsonaro does have the support, as we've heard, of a large bodies in Congress. There's a bizarre caucus in the Brazilian Congress called the BBB. It stands for, in English, Bullets, Beef and Bible. And the agribusiness
Bullets, Beef and the Bible, then, you're saying, is sort of this political caucus.
Yeah, exactly. And it's in Portuguese, it says Boi, Bala and Biblia. And this is this an informal political caucus made people from the right across many political parties who will support Bolsonaro, particularly on the agribusiness side. And I think that their hope and his hope is that this is one sector of the Brazilian economy that will grow as he sees to liberalize, open up and regulate much of the economy.
A reminder that you're tuned into Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. On today's program, we're talking about Brazil's new president, Jair Bolsonaro, a man often referred to as the Trump of the tropics. If you're interested in more Global Journalists, check us out online at globaljournalist.org. There you can find our archives and additional coverage of underreported international news and human rights issues. You can also like us on Facebook, where we live stream, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, or see our video cast on YouTube. Richard Lapper, if I could bring you back in, one of the more controversial aspects of Bolsonaro's presidency has been his discussions about economic development, particularly as it relates to development in the Amazon rainforest, which, of course, is home to a lot of biodiversity, plays a key role in mitigating climate change. Talk to us about what he's moved to do in the Amazon and what the challenges are for him there.
So let me just kind of unpack the economic context a bit first, okay? I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that contributed to the unpopularity of the Workers' Party, particularly in the southeast and the south of the country, the more economically developed part, was the depth of the recession in Brazil between 2014 and 2016. We've already talked about the big rise in unemployment. There was essentially the private sector who got very disillusioned with the PT governments. What we've seen since then, since 2016, particularly since Bolsonaro came in, is a revival of private sector confidence. So that on the surface, that sounds fine. We're looking at growth this year. But there were a number of stumbling blocks down the line. And I think the three in particular I'd like to draw attention to. One is, and these are areas where the ideological agenda of the Bolsonaro government, the Trumpite agenda, the Bellinite agenda, clashes with the pragmatic realities of Brazil's economic development. One is the whole question of Brazil's dependency on Chinese trade and investment. Brazil's 20% of Brazil's exports go to China. If Brazil takes action against China, you know, as one person told me last week, it's kind of like economic suicide. The other is the whole question of
okay,
the Middle
I'm sorry.
East
so this is a parallel clearly with President Trump. Then Trump has said he's going to get tough on China. Bolsonaro's trying to do the same thing in Brazil. Brazil's even more dependent on Chinese trade than the U.S. in some ways.
More dependent, far more dependent. Brazil's, you know, very, very dependent on its agricultural and mining exports, yeah, for its foreign trade. Similar dependence in the Middle East. If you start, you know, shifting the, annoying everyone in the Arab world by shifting the embassy to Jerusalem, that will wreck efforts by agribusiness, which is one of Bolsonaro's main support bases, to increase their exports to places in the Middle East and Indonesia. And they do a lot of business there. The third thing, coming to your question on climate change and the Amazon, if Bolsonaro seriously thinks he's going to withdraw Brazil from the climate accord, this will have a direct impact on trade with Europe and many and the developed world that support action on climate change. Brazil is fundamental in the world's battle to tackle global warming. The Amazon has stores an awful lot of carbon dioxide. If you deforest the Amazon and just let it rip, as climate change deniers want to do, that will cause enormous damage, and it will damage Brazil's short-term trade prospects as well. So I think there's going to be, you know, these issues are all being fought out at the moment.
And James Green, I wanted to ask you about some of the sort of culture war issues in Brazil that are very similar to sort of the dynamic in the U.S. right now, particularly about some of the homophobic statements that Bolsonaro has made. I mean, did he win the election in spite of these statements, or did they actually help him with a significant part of the electorate? And are some of these inflammatory things that he says, are they just sort of rhetoric, or is he like moving towards carrying out policies like ending same-sex marriage in Brazil?
So I think the rhetoric is a part of a strategy to build support within evangelical Christians, which have now grown to be about 30% of the population. And so part of the campaign was a very conservative turn towards moral issues and calling for traditional family values. And one of those was distributing fake news, alleging that the candidate of the opposition was a pedophile, that had supported pedophilia in Brazil, and other false information circulating. This polarization in Brazil has caused an uptick in violence against LGBTQ people, more attacks on the streets, and more deaths. It's been a very alarming development for people.
I understand this is Congressman Jean Willis who's left the country as well.
Right. So Jean Willis was the first openly and politically gay congressperson. He was recently elected to his third term in office from Rio de Janeiro, but he's been receiving death threats for the last 5 years, and they've increased since it was learned that Fabio Bolsonaro, the son of Jair Bolsonaro, was actually had hired in his staff the wife and the mother of one of the leaders of the militias, a form of death squad or paramilitary organizations in Brazil, and the fear that he actually would be killed as was killed Maria Franco, a city councilwoman from Rio de Janeiro, was assassinated on March 14th of last year, led him to decide it was really no longer safe for him to be in Brazil. So he is currently in political exile. There are actually three people in exile at this moment who have received significant and ongoing death threats, which have made them feel they need to be out of the country.
Well, Weira Davies, if I could turn this back to you then, James Green, he did raise this issue surrounding Bolsonaro's son, who's himself named Flavio. I understand he's also a congressman. Part of Bolsonaro's appeal was that he was sort of clean, wasn't tainted by corruption in the way that so many of Brazil's leaders have been in the recent past. Now it appears there's a scandal surrounding his son, Flavio. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, you're quite right. That was one of his biggest appeals in his election. Obviously, unlike Lula, the very enigmatic and popular former left-wing leader who has recently had his jail term increased for corruption. Corruption, of course, was endemic in Brazilian politics. I must say, having covered, of course, the impeachment of Dilma Rousseff, there was never any solid allegations of corruption or benefiting on her part behalf. But this clean image that Bolsonaro presented, a former junior military officer, a big fan of the military dictatorship from 64 to the mid-80s, it was a sort of clean image, a man who was dedicated to sorting out crime and corruption. And this is part of his appeal. Brazilians were fed up with corruption. They're fed up with a political and economic class which ripped off the country. Brazil is still emerging from a devastating scandal surrounding Petrobras, the huge oil company, and the amount of money creamed off by politicians and businesses of all parties. Previously, we've seen another scandal called the Mensalão scandal, which was engineered by Lula, which gave members of Congress a monthly addition to their salaries if they supported him. And so that was the background to this campaign which Bolsonaro successfully led to become president. But of course, as you say, he has almost within a month of coming to office, one of his sons has now been enrolled in a scandal where he's alleged to have been creaming off money from his workers' salaries. There was the links with alleged links to the organized crime in Rio de Janeiro we've just heard about. And these may affect Bolsonaro. These may stick to Bolsonaro. I think it's too early to say, you know, that they're going to be fatal for him. But having been elected on this ticket of cleanliness and anti-corruption, he's already been tainted by it.
Well, Richard Lapper, our time does grow short, but I want to give you the last word here. If looking forward over the next 3.5-4 years of his term here, what do you predict? What direction will Brazil go in?
Give me the easy question. Very difficult to say. It's hard to say how these tensions within the government are going to be resolved. My expectation, actually, is that the ideologues who are present in the education, the human rights, the foreign ministry are already losing ground to a very conservative but more institutional approach, and that the sort of wilder commentator calls a lunatic fringe of the Bolsonaro administration will lose ground. And I think economic reality is likely to impinge in a big way. Now, whether this will be a very smooth and successful government I don't think so, right? I mean, this is not going to be an easy process. And I don't think, you know, the problem is that many of the issues that Brazil has got to tackle, whether it's organized crime, whether it's corruption, they're very complex issues. And it's not clear at this point that Bolsonaro has got the experience or the policies that are necessary to tackle these problems.
I'm sorry, Richard, we're just out of time. We're going to have to stop you there for this edition of Global Journalist, a production of the Reynolds Journalism Institute at the Missouri School of Journalism and KBIA Mid-Missouri Public Radio. Many thanks to Patricia Campos Melo, Richard Lapper, Wira Davies, and James Green for joining us. Our assistant producers this week are Gail Fournier, Connor O'Halloran, Megan Smaltz, and Samantha Wigan, with supervising producer Rosemary Belson. Grace Lett is visual editor, and Takia Thomas is audio engineer. Travis McMillan is director. For all of us at Global Journalist, I'm Jason McClure. Thanks for tuning in.